Welcome to this edition of the Pepperdine People Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Gibson. This series captures some of the outstanding learning and outreach opportunities available here at Pepperdine. Each episode features interviews with exceptional members of our community and the special people who visit our campus.
Thank you for joining us for Pepperdine People. I'm Steve Zickman. I'm joined today by Pete Peterson. Well, we're having our Taking It Upstream conference on September 25th. And the focus on the conference is on collaboration, consensus building, and sustainable development. Pete, maybe if you could tell us just a little bit of your background, both at Common Sense California and here at Pepperdine.
Sure. Well, the story is really intertwined. I am executive director of Common Sense California. As an organization, we consult with city and county governments and some nonprofits as they seek to engage their publics in making policy decisions. So we do that in a couple different ways. We consult with them. We also work with practitioners and act in sort of a matchmaking relationship where we'll bring in practitioners to help lead some of these public engagement projects. And those can be specific in a number of different areas. Most of the public engagement work that we do, especially at the city and county government level, are on issues of either planning, land use and development, or in the area of budgets. And obviously, we're in a time now, both on the planning side, but also on the budget side, where cities and counties are under a severe amount of strain. And so they come to us as a consultant to help them engage their publics in a legitimate way to help them make these decisions. Because as we'll discuss today, certainly on the planning side, but also in these areas related to budget, cities and counties are looking now more than ever for the informed voice of their residents. And so we work at that level. The relationship with Pepperdine is interesting. Essentially, we were incubated, if it could be put in those kinds of terms, at Pepperdine, at their School of Public Policy, 2 years ago. Common Sense California was founded in part by David Davenport, who former president here of Pepperdine and also a former professor at the School of Public Policy. He was one of the founding board members of Common Sense California. And the School of Public Policy, in helping to build and be a home, an early home for Common Sense California, not only did that through providing office space and support, but we also have developed an education program there. So we're one of the early schools in the country to offer coursework in citizen engagement at the School of Public Policy. So there's been a real relationship that's built both on the incubation side and kind of getting Common Sense California off the ground as an organization. But it's been very – it's been a reciprocal relationship in the sense that we've also fed back to the school some of this education and coursework. And we've definitely seen students come out of the School of Public Policy program with that background go on to careers in civic engagement.
Well, you know, I got a fellowship to do this conference. And when I started planning it a year and a half ago, this area of dispute resolution really wasn't so much a part of things over at the Strauss Institute. And yet, the more we've gotten to know each other over the last year and a half, it seems like such a natural fit between public policy and the work that's being done over at the law school, in particular over at the Strauss. And you – there was a conference as well. Was it about a couple of years ago?
Yeah,
on this work?
Right. It was February 2007. Common Sense California and the School of Public Policy put on a conference entitled Deliberative Democracy in California. And deliberative democracy is more of a inside baseball term, but it essentially is the practice whereby citizens are consulted in the making of policy decisions. And at that conference, again, it was up at the School of Public Policy in February 2007, we brought in most all the major practitioners in this field. So we had folks ranging from Dr. Jim Fishkin, who has a methodology called the deliberative poll. He's up out of Stanford. We had folks from Viewpoint Learning, which is a practitioner organization based in San Diego that has a methodology called choice work dialogues. We even had a former provincial parliament member from British Columbia, a guy by the name of Gordon Gibson, who ran a process called a citizens assembly in British Columbia, which was looking to make a decision on political reform up there. So we had about a half dozen or so major practitioners to discuss the scope of the field and also what the implications might be for California. And it was really out of that that so much of the work that we're doing now in California sprang from.
What do you think of some of the challenges that are facing us right now? You know, when we watch some of these citizens, what are they, citizens forums and
the town hall meetings,
that seem to be blowing up all over the country. And what do you think are some of the challenges today, especially in the context of sustainable development and climate change?
Well, I think initially, and we can only have to go back 3 or 4 years, the whole field of citizen engagement, I think by many in positions of whether they be leaders in government or leaders in nonprofits, I think they saw many of them. In fact, I know they saw citizen engagement as kind of a nice to have, a kind of a good government thing. Let's get the citizens out. Let's get the voice of the people kind of thing. But times have changed, and it's happened very fast. Life comes at you fast, as they say. And what it's meant specifically here in California, that under the immense pressure of the budget crisis that is obviously a national issue, but it's even more so here in California, and what I would argue to be the crisis in planning that we're seeing, sustainable planning in particular, that is befalling cities and regions here in California, that citizen engagement involving everyday citizens in some of these decisions has moved from a nice to have good government feel good process or set of processes to a definite must have necessary leadership skill for people in those same positions. So whether we're talking about city planners, city managers, mayors, county officials, city council people, schools as well, school superintendents, school board members, the folks that kind of saw at one stage or at one point engaging the public as something that would be nice to do, we're seeing as an organization people in these positions come to us under the immense pressure of the decisions that they're faced with, saying basically that the old way of making these decisions, again, whether we're talking about planning issues or budgets or school issues, whatever the case might be, making those purely at the stakeholder level, which again is implicit in that many of the dispute resolution and mediation processes that we've talked about in the past, that while they are part of the – maybe some of the tools in the toolbox, that the leadership toolbox needs to be expanded to include these more participatory processes. Again, these civic engagement techniques are not something by which we as an organization would ever say this is the only way now to make decisions. But what we are seeing as we work with more and more folks in governments around the state is that they're looking for new ways to make some of these decisions, ways that are much more participatory and inclusive. So to take it all the way through to the issue of sustainability and planning, quite frankly, some of these decisions affect a lot more people. I'm sure we're going to discuss a little bit more some of the issues related to SB 375 here in the state. But just to take a first pass at it, some of the issues that planners are facing now and some of the issues that the state is facing regarding sustainability, these decisions are affecting a lot more people. And again, where there was at one point, and in some cases this environment certainly, no pun intended, this environment certainly still exists, there you still can make many of these decisions at what could be construed to be the stakeholder level. Some of these decisions are so vast and the scope is so large that many more people need to be involved. And so the question becomes, how do you engage these larger audiences effectively? And so what we're doing as an organization, we're proposing and we're seeing this reflected back to us by folks in government, this understanding that civic engagement is a leadership skill and can be put alongside some of these other skills like conflict resolution and mediation. So we're definitely seeing this as a leadership skill, as a way of engaging the public in legitimate ways to make some of these very difficult decisions.
And early on, before we get into even more conflict down the road, is that the idea with a lot of this?
I think it can be seen in one of two ways. Although I would actually put civic engagement and the processes of engaging the public more at the back end of the toolbox, if it can be seen that way, than the front end. It can be done in any other way. You can engage the public early on. But what we find more often than not, and you can certainly – I think this case can certainly be made in issues around planning and sustainable planning. If there are people at the stakeholder level that can find another way to make a decision outside of engaging the public, they will do it. So, for example, we saw an issue up in a city up in the Bay Area where there was a very significant, relative to the size of the city, a very significant land use issue that was to be adjudicated. It was to be the building of a major housing development in what many construed to be an environmentally sensitive area. And we were working with the city, both the city manager, city planner, and city council, to see if there was a way to engage the public around making this decision. There was an entity or an agency at the stakeholder level that did not want to be a part of that process and quite frankly saw a route through a ballot proposition to try to get – to try to make their case. And so this entity needed to be involved in the process because they were very powerful and spoke for – and represented a certain faction. But if they did not want to be a part of the citizen engagement process, there was no way to bind them there. And so what they did was they pulled out of what was developing to be a civic engagement process and went to ballot. They found some outside money. They raised some money to put this planning issue on the ballot. And essentially that ballot said that there was going to be no development in this area. That ballot proposition lost when it went before the general public, and here we are a year later back in the same exact place where we are now. Well, now that entity is much more willing to be a part of a civic engagement process because they've already taken that other route and found and were defeated in that. And so I think that
– So in that sense, it's downstream instead of upstream.
Right. And it can be seen that way. Now, I've also seen when it's done – when all parties are willing – when they all buy into a civic engagement process, that you can head off a lot of later consternation by engaging the public early. But I think more often than not, when Common Sense California is called into a situation, it is after a lot of different pathways have been pursued and have been found wanting. So whether it's upstream or downstream, I think it's most effective when it's done when it can be taken at the earlier stages. But in many ways, people need to go through other processes and find that they either in these cases have been unsuccessful before they're willing to come to this table and say, okay, what would the – if the public knew what we knew at the stakeholder level, what would they decide? That is a difficult – that's a difficult step to take for a lot of people. There's a lot of the – especially at the stakeholder level, a lot of the taking the hands off the wheel to say, again, that question, if the public had the same information we had, what – and they understood the same trade-offs that we understand, what would they decide? But again, people usually, especially at the stakeholder level, only come to that point after they've pursued other ways of making that decision to try to get, quite frankly, and this goes all the way back, you know, to the Federalist Papers and the opposing of factions and the competition amongst factions, that only after they've gone through that, what can be definitely seen to be more of a conflictual set of processes, will they be willing then to come to the table to say, okay, let's engage the public.
Do you think there are certain special qualities in Southern California, especially LA, the LA region, that are different, make for something different in the stuff that you're describing than in Northern California or even, I guess, San Diego?
I'm not sure if I would break it apart that way. But I would say this. I would say that it is harder, it is more difficult to be a public official in California than in any other state in the country.
Why?
I would say that for a couple different reasons. One is there was a report issued by the sociologist Robert Putnam just two summers ago. Putnam had written Bowling Alone, that study on civic engagement and participation in the country, bestseller. Putnam issued a report 2 years ago called E Pluribus Unum, which was a study which focused on 41 cities across the country using a set of metrics to determine which were the most civically engaged cities. And through that process, they came to some what came to be seen as very controversial conclusions. The main one being simply that in cities in which there is a high level of ethnic diversity, there is a low level of civic engagement. And what I think even Putnam was shocked by was that even in areas where there's high ethnic diversity, not only is there what he defined as low levels of civic trust between people in different ethnic groups, but even within ethnic groups, there are low levels of trust. So what does that mean if you're the mayor of Los Angeles? What does it mean if you're the mayor of San Francisco? Well, in the scale that Putnam had put together, three of the four lowest scoring cities in this civic engagement scale were in California. It was Los Angeles was number one. San Francisco was number two. And Oakland was number four. Minneapolis was three. Now, if you extrapolate that across the state, and we are obviously the most diverse state in the country, it is very difficult for public officials in these environments, whether you're making a decision about a budget or a public safety issue or a planning issue, to bring different factions to the table when you have so many factions. And I would argue that it's more important than for public leaders, whether you're a city planner or a mayor or a police chief, to be more proactive in engaging the public here in California and specifically in these cities like Los Angeles, San Diego, San Francisco, Oakland, Fresno, wherever we want to be talking about, that it's more imperative to be proactive as a leader in engaging the public in a legitimate way here than any place else in the country.
Which gets us back to that leadership point that you made earlier.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, quite frankly, and I don't want to get weighted down too much in this issue of ethnic diversity, but I think what also complicates the matter here in California is the scope of some of the planning decisions that are being made here. California is experienced in being one of the fastest growing state in the country. We've been since the early 1960s the largest state by population, and we continue to grow at rates that other states, it's just incomprehensible to them. Where are they going to live? I speak with city planners on a fairly regular basis. And in fact, I had a conversation about a month or so ago with a regional planner out in Riverside who said, we're going to have 1 million people here in the next 10 years, 1 million more people here in the next 10 years. Where are they going to live? So the scope of some of these planning decisions related to growth, complicated by ethnic diversity, really then put even a greater weight on making these decisions in a transparent and inclusive and a participatory way. Again, at a scope and at a level that is unseen anywhere else in the country.
And what about, we had talked actually earlier this week about the fires here in LA, whether it's the fires or stuff going on the coast, the proximity in a place like LA of people to, or the fact that we're surrounded by, ocean on one side and mountains on the other side and these vast valleys in between. How do you think that plays into the choices that we have at this time?
Well, I think what we're seeing with fires in some ways is not on the exact same level, certainly, but we're seeing a similar set of policy decisions that were faced and are currently being faced in New Orleans around Katrina, which is simply when people live in areas where there's a chance of possible natural disaster, which will incur significant costs on several different levels, the greatest of those costs being the loss of life, which we saw very tragically with the loss of those two firefighters. What are we as a society going to do to compensate for those costs? I'm sure that you've seen that there have been some discussions lately. I've seen several legislators raise the question of, should there be either extra taxes or fees associated with the building of houses in areas where there are high chances of being a fire disaster happening? The understanding being, if they're going to incur extra costs from a service perspective, what should be the compensatory financial support for those decisions? I don't think that's a decision that can just be made by one or two legislators or even a group of legislators. I think that those are decisions that can really be made more societally and even to understand society on a city-by-city basis. You could still make it local. But I think those decisions relating to the offering of public services and how those public services are naturally dependent upon the planning decisions that get made city-by-city, county by county, region by region, I think we as societies, it behooves all of us to participate in these kinds of decisions.
What are your hopes for the conference?
Well, I think primarily, and your first question went to it, I think primarily my hope for the conference is that civic engagement is seen as a tool in the toolbox, that it's understood alongside of dispute resolution and mediation to be seen as a tool in the toolbox for making some of these extremely difficult decisions that mayors, city managers, planners, developers, nonprofit organizations that are involved in this work have to make. That there's an understanding that there is this other way of making these decisions. And if some of these other methodologies or other processes are exhausted, then there are examples where the public has been legitimately engaged in helping to make some of these decisions. And at its deepest level, when the public is engaged in making these decisions, the public helps define what their community looks like. Because in many ways, these planning decisions affect how big a community is going to be, how big a city is going to be, where it's going to develop to. Obviously, with these fires, we've seen some of those decisions made. And so understanding that the public can be an essential part of making some of these decisions that affect a lot of people.
Now, in that toolbox, are ballot measures in that toolbox too? And litigation? I mean, you mentioned mediation.
I think those things, my experience has been that those other elements, whether it be through the courts or through the ballot, folks know those exist. I mean, there's actually a phrase I know from speaking with some planners up in San Francisco. that there have been some things, there have been some decisions where they just call it zoning by ballot.
Right.
And so folks at that stakeholder level, again, whether we're talking about nonprofit organizations or we're talking about city planning departments or we're talking about regional governments, some of these COGs, they understand those processes already. They've been to court and they've been to the ballot. Mm-hmm. They've been through mediation and they've been through dispute resolution. But
they may not understand.
They may. Yeah. And in fact, I don't think most do. And I think I know that many of them understand the phrase when you say civic engagement or public participation to folks in that are in a lot of these positions. They see it as a way of doing one of two things. Either let's get the public together to lobby them to make the decision that we want to make, or we've already made this decision and let's just at least tell the public that this is coming. So it's either civic engagement as a lobbying mechanism, which quite frankly, to go back to the town hall meeting understanding, one of the reasons that the town halls have melted down is because the public that went there was either doing one or two things. Either they had their mind made up and they were going – which is understandable. They had their mind made up and they were going to tell their congressman, this is what we want to see done. And they were met with an understanding of we're not going – the congressman saying we're not going to go down that path. Or you had citizens coming to some of these gatherings that really wanted to enter into a debate. And the structure of those meetings was such that there wasn't going to be a debate. This was going to be an informing process that a congressman was coming to say, this is the decision that we've already made. We just want to let you know. Now, if you're someone – now, granted, there were folks that were bussed in from both sides into a lot of these things, which certainly created a lot of problems. But one of the issues in some of the reports that I heard back, one of the ways in which some of these meetings went bad was when people that showed up learned that this was not going to be a debate. This wasn't going to be about informing a congressman. This was going to be about sitting and listening to the congressman's argument as to why he or she voted a certain way or would be pursuing a certain policy. So to again pull it back to the planners today and also public officials, more often than not, they see civic engagement as simply an either a lobbying or informing mechanism. Where we have seen some really great work being done is where a public official, usually pushed to a point of exasperation by pursuing other methods, is willing to say, here are the facts as they've been presented to me. What would you decide? And not necessarily make that process a rubber stamp, but to make that process an informing mechanism into the actual institutional decision-making process.
Right, because I took part in that one of Jim Fishkin's deliberative polls up in San Mateo.
Right. We were part of that as well.
And that's
right.
A two, three-day
yep.
process
right.
of people in small groups. I thought a lot of it was learning how to talk with each other, even if you're yeah. on different sides. Learning how to – I think they only had one thing they had to come up with for consensus was a question for mm-hmm. a panel of experts and then presenting that question to the experts. And then coming back into small groups. So back and forth. And one of the things that I thought came out of it was just the people learning how to participate
yeah.
in a more in a non-town hall style
yeah.
and really over giving them enough time so that by the end of it, it seemed that people had a more informed sense
yeah.
of what they thought or what they
yeah.
were thinking. And then also the politicians, the elected officials – could more reliably rely on that.
Well, and this is Dr. Jim Fishkin, who heads up the Center for Deliberative Democracy at Stanford. He's also head of their communications department. His methodology is called the deliberative poll. And the process that you're discussing is one that we were a part of. It's called Threshold 2008. And for those who might be listening to this, if you wanted to go to threshold2008.org, you can find out a little bit more about that process. But one of the things that one of the ways in which Fishkin describes his process, which I think can be extrapolated to many of these civic engagement processes, is we already poll people to find out what they think on an issue when they haven't had a chance to think about it. You know, the typical kind of 8:30, you know, you're in the middle of dinner and you get the call about what do you think about healthcare?
Yeah.
The chances of getting real intelligent feedback, you know, in those kinds of environments, which is, you know, if you turn on the TV news any day, you can hear about a survey or a poll taken about a bunch of different issues, which there hasn't really been any sort of deliberation in the thinking. There's usually been some sort of a soliciting of a knee-jerk response. But at the same time, to finish out the Fishkin description, he says, we already poll people to think to see what they think when they haven't had a chance to think. What if we gave them a chance to think about an issue and then polled them? And so his process, and again, this is I think could be said of a lot of these deliberative processes, is not just about finding out what people think. It's about folks learning about an issue, as you say, learning how to engage with one another. These are person-to-person things that are happening. It's not just one person calling another person on a telephone and saying, what do you think about the new housing development? It is about learning about issues in context with others and helping to trying to come to some sort of final conclusion on an issue or consensus on an issue. And that's a completely different way of helping to make decisions.
Well, I think we're drawing to an end. Thank you for taking part in this conversation and also for shedding some light on the conference, the Taking It Upstream conference.
Thanks, Steve.